It is Tuesday, December 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the oil executive selected by President-elect Donald Trump faces Republican criticism. The United Nations says it has reports saying civilians are killed by pro-Syrian forces in Aleppo. And we hear about nominees for the Grammy Awards. It's all ahead. President-elect Donald Trump has announced his nomination for Secretary of State, and he selected ExxonMobil Chairman and Chief Executive Officer Rex Tillerson, and he will be nominated to be the nation's top diplomat. I'm joined now by VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Well, Michael, this nomination seems, though, it's going to be controversial, particularly among President-elect Trump's own Republican Party, some of the members in the Senate.
Sarah, there are members of the Senate of both political parties who are voicing some concerns. That said, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Corker, which will be holding the confirmation hearing, has already committed to holding that hearing for Rex Tillerson in early January, in other words, weeks before President-elect Trump is even inaugurated. That said, there are senators on that committee, and Republicans only have a one-vote majority in that committee. For instance, Marco Rubio has said that that he has concerns that the next Secretary of State must be free of potential conflicts of interest. And if one Republican senator were to vote against Rex Tillerson in committee, or indeed if three Republican senators were to vote against him on the Senate floor, then he would not be confirmed.
Now, is this because of Mr. Tillerson's friendship, relationship with Russia and with Russian President Vladimir Putin?
That certainly seems to be where the most concern lies. Tillerson is the head of ExxonMobil, a corporate titan that has energy interests around the globe, including in Russia. And indeed, Mr. Tillerson knows Vladimir Putin, I believe has received an award from Vladimir Putin. And this comes at a time when Congress is in an uproar, as it is, over allegations that maybe the Kremlin was meddling in America's election last month. So the timing of the Tillerson nomination is certainly interesting, given the larger currents and the political winds surrounding the United States and Russia at this moment.
Has Mr. Trump made it known why he selected Mr. Tillerson? Because Tillerson, as he has had a long career at ExxonMobil, but he has not had any government or diplomatic experience.
Well, during the campaign, President-elect Trump made clear that he believed that American businessmen, that the titans of American industry, were those best equipped to help lead the country. He regularly railed against Washington bureaucrats and said that his business buddies were the most brilliant people who could help lead the country. He is holding true to that, not just in terms of the Secretary of State pick, but in many other areas of government as well. If you look at his nominations so far, they come primarily from U.S. business or from the military.
Well, it seems that the next few weeks when these hearings get underway should be highly interesting.
I expect I will have my hands full from my Senate perch, indeed.
I think you will very much. Thanks very much, Michael. That's a VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Well, also joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, we talked about yesterday this Tillerson nomination before it had officially happened, and a lot of the speculation about that, the concerns about the relationship with Vladimir Putin, as Michael was just talking about, and those are still being expressed today on social media. But we're also seeing some folks from the right who are concerned about Tillerson being too liberal, especially among some of the more conservative Trump supporters, accusing him of supporting abortion rights, LGBT rights, Common Core education standards. Now, it's interesting because those aren't really areas that the Secretary of State deals with extensively, but they are going after Tillerson from that direction because of that. So to allude to what you were saying, I think that is going to be perhaps a tough fight from him from both sides, at least based on what we're seeing on social media. Another story out of Aleppo, Syria. We have this young woman, Bana Alabed. She's 7 years old, and she and along with her mother, Fatima, have been tweeting as they've been in Aleppo over the past months trying to escape the besieged city. And on December 12th, they kind of stopped tweeting and went dark for a little while. There was some concern about what had gone on, whether they were safe or whatnot. And they're back tweeting, and it's been fascinating to follow along with them. They're at Alabed Bana, if you follow them on Twitter, to see kind of through the seven-year-old's eyes what it's like to be in Aleppo as they deal with the horrors there. So she and her mother are tweeting along with that. They sent out a tweet saying that it is her last moment to either live or die. That was about 8 hours ago. So we'll see if hopefully they are able to escape that city, and we'll continue to follow along with them
on
social media.
And we will be having more on the Aleppo situation later on in the program. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor, Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The U.S. kills three top Islamic State leaders in Syria. A critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin and of corruption will run for the Russian presidency. There are calls for probes into apparent Russian cyber attacks on U.S. election, and they go across party lines. And a captain is blamed for Mediterranean migrant deaths. He's sentenced to 18 years in prison. Expanded coverage of these stories are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Most of the extrasolar planets discovered so far are orbiting older or more mature stars with a fully developed planetary system. But new observations made by scientists working with the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array in Chile are providing evidence of two still developing, possibly Jupiter-sized planets circling a relatively young star. The scientists say signs of the two developing planets were found in rings of carbon monoxide gas between bands of dust within the star's surrounding protoplanetary disk, or materials left over from the formation of the star. The planet's host star is said to be located some 400 light-years from Earth, is only about 5 million years old, and has about twice the mass of our own sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the Grammy Award nominations are out, and we'll hear more about them. The United Nations says it has received reports of pro-government forces in Syria killing civilians in four different neighborhoods in the city of Aleppo. UN rights spokesman Rupert Colville said in Geneva, it's difficult to verify reports, and it's not clear when exactly the killings were to have occurred.
In all, as of yesterday evening, we've received reports of pro-government forces killing at least 82 civilians, including 11 women and 13 children, in four different neighborhoods. That's Bustan al-Qasr, al-Fadus, al-Kalasa, and al-Salahin. The only way to alleviate the deep foreboding and suspicion that massive crimes may be underway, both within Aleppo and in relation to some of those who fled or were captured, whether fighters or civilians, is for there to be monitoring by external bodies, such as the UN.
Krista Armstrong is a spokesperson for the International Committee of the Red Cross. She's based in Geneva. I asked her about the situation in Aleppo.
I mean, we're very alarmed about the situation in Aleppo and the levels of human suffering and destruction that we've seen these past few weeks, but also months throughout the city, and particularly right now for the civilians who are trapped in between the different sides in eastern Aleppo and are not able necessarily to flee or are not able just to find any kind of safety or any kind of anywhere that's safe. We've been supporting thousands of people who've been arriving in some of the collective shelters in other parts of the city and who've been, you know, on the move. And we've heard alarming stories from them about the difficulties they had in trying, you know, also on their journeys, but also when they were hunkering down, trying to find safety, trying to find food was impossible. Getting the services they need, life-saving services, proved extremely difficult. And many families were also separated, sometimes on their journeys. So we remained extremely concerned about those who are still in eastern Aleppo, and you know, appeal to all sides to try and find a solution that will ensure that lives are spared and they can be much better protected.
There are reports, I don't know if they've been verified, of civilians being executed on the streets I guess government troops going into buildings and killing civilians. Have you seen reports like that?
I mean, we are aware of the reports. There are many different reports regarding, you know, with allegations on different types of behavior on different sides. Our role is really to see how we can best engage with all sides right now to ensure that we can do the best to protect civilians. We can't. We're not on the ground in these areas. It's very difficult to get a clear picture of exactly what's going on. And we, you know, remind all sides that we're in contact with of their obligations to protect civilian lives and to distinguish between fighters and civilians. But right now, the key thing is really to continue dialoguing with both sides to ensure that people can find safety and be better protected.
I believe talks are going to take place shortly at the United Nations, where they're going to look at perhaps allowing an organization such as yours to go in there to allow to, you know, to try to get civilians out. Is that something that you're working on?
I mean, we did a plea, you know, publicly yesterday to all sides to spare human life and to find any kind of humanitarian solution and agreement to make sure that this could happen. So whether that is by us being able to reach, you know, that there is a sufficient, that there's a real pause in the fighting, that we can go and reach communities, find out directly their needs and respond to them, or if it's another, you know, evacuating the sick and wounded, because we know the situation, the health situation is catastrophic and has been for a long time in this part of the city. We will push for that side and keep engaging to ensure it can happen. So we hope that something like that will be able to take place.
Krista Armstrong, she's spokesperson for the International Committee of the Red Cross, and she's based in Geneva. Meanwhile, the International Coalition of Relief Groups, the Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations, said on Monday there was a chemical attack in the suburbs of Hama, Syria. Dr. Hussam Al-Nahas is the organization's chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear expert. He spoke to me from Istanbul, Turkey.
Well, unfortunately, it's something completely new that we never witnessed before or had previous reports about before, because reports were talking about around 300 victims and around 87 and between 87 and 90 deaths, and the symptoms are new comparing with other attacks. So they were talking about hallucination and agitation and pupil dilatation and convulsions, generalized convulsions.
What is your organization's response to this attack?
Well, unfortunately, the location is inaccessible for us because it's a place that belongs, it's under ISIS control, so we don't have access to this location.
This attack, was this done by the government, the Syrian government, or by ISIS?
Well, the reports were talking about airstrike that delivered these agents, this attack.
So it wouldn't have been Islamic State then?
No, because ISIS, they don't have airplanes or air forces.
Were the people that this affected, apparently a number of children were affected by this?
Well, I have the report now. So most victims were children under 10 years old, especially in Al Jarrouh village, which was the most affected village in the place, in the area.
That is Dr. Hussam Al-Nahas. He is a spokesperson for the Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. One of the biggest stars in music could be ready to grab a bunch of Grammy Awards. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins International Edition's Jim Stevenson with all the details.
The 59th annual Grammy Awards. The big night will happen on February 12th in Los Angeles. Grammy voters nominated entries in 84 categories, and we have between now and then to argue about why they included the people they did or why they didn't put in our favorites. Beyonce leads all nominees with 9. She already has 20 Grammy wins. Her husband Jay-Z has 21, so this is her chance to leapfrog way ahead of him. Mm-hmm. Drake, Rihanna, and Kanye West have 8 nominations apiece. Adele earned 5, and the main event this year in the Grammys would seem to be between Adele and Beyonce, because they're going head-to-head in 3 of the big categories: Album of the Year, Record of the Year, and Song of the Year.
Wow, that keeps it interesting.
And by the way, Record and Song of the Year are different, because Record of the Year honors the artist, Song of the Year honors the songwriter. Now, in the Album of the Year race, one of the surprises, at least for me, was that David Bowie's Black Star album didn't make the cut. Now, we have entries from Beyonce, Adele, Justin Bieber, Drake, and singer-songwriter Sturgill Simpson, who's got to be considered the dark horse in the Album of the Year race. Bowie died in January, but a lot of people, critics and fans alike, thought Black Star was still among his very best albums and deserving of an Album of the Year nod. Bowie did earn nominations for Best Alternative Music Album, Best Rock Performance, and Best Rock Song. So it's not like the Grammy committee completely overlooked him. Not surprisingly, Beyonce stirred a little controversy. Now, of course, she started the year by dropping her Lemonade album and performing a controversial halftime show at the Super Bowl. Well, her song Don't Hurt Yourself has been nominated for Best Rock Performance. So Beyonce is up for a Rock Grammy Award. She's going against Bowie, Alabama Shakes, 21 Pilots, and the band Disturbed. Disturbed is super heavy rock. And the members of Disturbed say, well, it's kind of weird to be running against Beyonce.
Wasn't she at the CMA Awards Country Music as well?
Well, her song Daddy Lessons, which she and the Dixie Chicks performed at the CMA Awards, and stirred up quite a bit of controversy among some of the country faithful. Daddy Lessons failed to make the cut for a country nomination. So the Grammy Country Committee drew the line at Beyonce, and that exclusion has also generated a little controversy. So Beyonce is in the eye of the storm.
You might call her the ultimate crossover artist at this point.
At this point, exactly right. Everybody has an opinion about Beyonce.
That's Ray McDonald. You'll find him each and every week, our own Top 20 Countdown presenter on VOA 1.
And you can also find me on Twitter at Ray on the Hits.
Thank you so much, Ray.
All right, Jim.
I'm fresher than you. Fresher than you.
Oh. That is the music of Beyoncé. Well, in other news, new research suggests that clouds on the massive exoplanet HAT-P7b could be made of rubies and sapphires. Writing in the journal Nature Astronomy, researchers from the University of Warwick in England say the discovery was made when observing weather patterns on the planet, which is 1,000 light years away. It's the first time weather patterns on a gas giant exoplanet have been observed. That's according to researchers. They said that they monitored likely visually stunning clouds that could be made of corundum, a mineral found in rubies and sapphires as they moved around the planet. Well, despite the potential riches of precious stones, HAT-P7b is not a comfortable place to be. For one, the planet is believed to be 16 times bigger than Earth. It's also rocked by violent weather systems, catastrophic storms, and high temperatures reaching 2,500 degrees Celsius. The planet is also tidally locked. One side faces the planet's star all the time, making one side of the planet hot and the other very cold. Researchers were able to discern an equatorial jet with dramatically variable wind speeds that push vast amounts of cloud across the planet. HAT-P7b was first discovered in 2008. It's 500 times more massive than Earth and 40% bigger than Jupiter. Its star is about twice the size of our sun. Well, that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
With the stroke of a pen and a decisive vote by Colombia's Congress, the longest-running conflict in the Western Hemisphere ended. On November 24th, Colombia's president, Juan Manuel Santos, and Rodrigo Londoño, commander of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, signed a peace agreement, and on November 30th, Colombia's Congress approved the accord. It was a difficult process and a long time coming. 4 years of difficult negotiations led to the first signing of an agreement in late September, which both sides hoped would end Colombia's 52-year internal conflict. But 6 days later, the Colombian people rejected the agreement by a narrow margin. Many voters felt it did not go far enough to hold FARC members accountable for their past actions. So it was back to the negotiating table for both sides, where a revised version of the document was agreed upon. On November 30th, Colombia's Congress voted to approve the revised accord. It now includes a requirement that FARC members declare and hand over all of their assets to pay for reparations to victims. FARC members must also declare the full truth about their involvement in drug trafficking. The agreement further defined the restrictions of liberty for those who committed crimes against humanity, and it clarified that the accord will not be incorporated into Colombia's constitution, as had been previously proposed. The United States welcomes the approval of the peace accord, which we believe will help achieve a just and lasting peace for all Colombians, said Secretary of State John Kerry. The Colombian people deserve enormous credit for their persistence, commitment, and focus in this endeavor. Special recognition must go to President Juan Manuel Santos, who has earned the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts, he said. Our Paz Colombia initiative, aimed at supporting continued institutional development, aiding conflict victims, removing landmines, combating narcotics, and addressing remaining security issues, is designed to help our Colombian partners achieve the lasting peace that they have fought so hard for, and that they so richly deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.